Hi, welcome to season 3 of the Pictures Out There podcast series. This is chat number 27. If you are thinking about coaching or being coached by others, you've come to the right place. Today, Lee and Dave talk about coaching in jobs, with our families, or our friends. And now, here's Dave and Lee.
Well, thank you, Candy, for that very kind introduction. This is Lee.
And this is Dave.
Hey, welcome back to the Pictures Out There podcast series. We are so grateful that you've joined us. We'd like to welcome in our current audience, our future audience, Dave.
Hey.
And you know what? The future audience very probably consists of AI, advanced artificial intelligence, aliens, our universal audience. So welcome in. As is our wont, we begin all of these discussions by having you reflect on two questions. What are your pictures and what are your ideals?
All right. And today, Lee and I are going to have a really interesting chat around coaching. So let's first of all talk about that word and what we mean by it and invite you to think of it in the way that you would like to. There's no wrong way to think about coaching.
Mm-hmm.
We're thinking of coaching from the standpoint of professional business coaching, which Lee and I have done extensively for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
We're certainly going to be talking about that and using a lot of examples from our own experience or the business world to talk about coaching.
Yep.
And we're also inviting you to think about it from the standpoint of helping other people, talking with them, having a relationship with them. It may be in a parental role. And we all know as parents that we have children and ultimately the children become the coach
right.
over time and
yes.
we coach each other.
Yes.
And in the greatest relationships, there is a coaching element that both parties have where at different points in time in the course of helping each other, you coach each other. And one of the things we always want to underscore is that in a coaching relationship, usually if it's done well, the coach gets as much out of it as the coachee.
Absolutely.
In the course of helping, instructing, talking about something, ahas
yes.
usually happen for the coach as they are coaching the other person. And so that's the gift that happens through help and through coach.
Absolutely.
So we really want to talk about that from the standpoint of relationships. All of the relationships that happen that have a coaching element to them. Okay.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and kick things off. And Lee, let's talk about business first. We'll kind of go to some of our professional stuff. And we will talk about that in the course of a business relationship. And
mm-hmm.
we'll say a manager or a boss.
Right.
And the person that works with them.
A team member.
And for them, a team member. There is coaching.
Yes.
That happens.
Right. And typically, we characterize that as performance coaching, right?
Right.
Hey, you have professional expectations and accountabilities and deliverables for which you're responsible. So the coach, the boss, in that context, is trying to advise you and give you guardrails to achieve your objectives, right? That's the most clinical or sterile
yeah.
way to think about it, perhaps. And that's appropriate and it's valuable. And you and I both have done that 1,000 times.
Yeah.
But I think it becomes deeper and richer for all parties concerned if you can go, what are your ambitions in this role? What is it that you hope to get out of this role that you're in? And how does what you hope to get out of this role connect with your larger life aspirations?
You mean actually asking the other person
what they would like to get out of their job.
What they would like
yeah.
to have happen.
Beyond the paycheck, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, it's appropriate and valuable to coach the business objectives.
Right.
But I think it's especially valuable to go beyond that and say, how is what you're doing right now, how does that get you down the path toward achieving your life objectives?
And lots of times the person in that situation, they've accepted the job. They've applied for the job.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be there. Lots of times, Lee, I think what gets uncovered in what you're describing is what I'll call a 10 or 20% factor where they are not exactly in sync with culture or they're not in sync with what the team or the organization may be trying to do. And what's so important
mm-hmm.
about what you're saying is that kind of conversation uncovers all the stuff where the person goes, yeah, no, this feels good. I'm wanting to do this. And it sounds like everything the organization's trying to do, but I also would like to do that.
Right.
And that doesn't necessarily align or
mm-hmm.
fit into what the team is trying to do or the organization. And lots of times through that coaching, there's a win-win that can happen.
Yes.
Or there's a way to validate
mm-hmm.
what that person is wanting to do.
Yeah, affirm.
And give them some, you know, opportunities and room to do that.
Yeah, put them on a project team that might give them new knowledge that they're seeking, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So, again, speaking from the wounds of my own experience, sometimes as a coach, the best thing you can do for someone is to help them out of the organization.
Yeah.
And I don't mean firing. I do not mean that. I mean, someone's articulated a life ambition, a long-term objective for themselves, and you go, it's unlikely that you're going to be able to achieve that in this context. Mm-hmm. So how can we equip you to go do what you want to do, even if it's for another organization?
And lots of times what you're doing is educating somebody about the notion of life stages and kind mm-hmm. of going, that what you're describing, it's not that you person don't necessarily fit here, or you person don't have unlimited value and that you don't matter. It's that this stage that you are wanting to go explore may not match
right.
what this organization is trying to do in its stage. It's right. just not a match, but that's not a judgment of you.
It's not.
That's not a judgment of the organization.
Yeah.
You're not a match.
Not in sync. There's yeah. no failure associated with
yeah.
that. None
yeah.
whatsoever.
Yeah.
yeah. So in terms of what you said in our introduction about how sometimes the coach gets, you know, more than they give the coachee.
Right.
I've always made it a habit to say, how can I be the best leader for you that I can possibly be? Tell me what that would look like.
Yeah.
What are my behaviors? What are my belief systems? What is it you need from me?
Yeah.
That's honestly some of the most valuable coaching I've received in return.
Yeah. There's a degree of personalization that is a key to a lot of the things that we'll end up talking about, because personalization is more of an opportunity than we usually acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
We lots of times as managers or as bosses may go, no, there's just kind of a set thing here that we're here to do, and everybody needs to kind of behave the same way.
Right.
And managers are usually better than that black and white description I just gave, but there's usually more opportunity to really personalize.
Mm-hmm.
To understand somebody's unique abilities, their gifts, their talents, and to really explore that. And lots of times the exchange that you're describing is a great venue and springboard to having those conversations. Whereas the coach, you go, I had no idea.
Right.
That this person
had that interest or talent
or background.
Yeah.
And there's some usefulness
right.
of that to the team. Lots of times it's a match we don't even know is there for us.
Yes.
Yeah. So lots of times, Lee, in the course of performance management or performance enablement, as you're describing it in a business setting, you know, there is the, oh, I need to give you feedback.
Right.
As a coach. There's a problem.
That's the F word. Feedback.
There's a problem. Or you did something wrong.
Right.
And I always get a kick out of and have over the years chuckle out of that. No, I just really love feedback. I mean, it's like, I guess there are people that just love it all, love all the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, well, I like it. Do I have a twinge when I know somebody is lifting up what they think is a mistake I've made
mm-hmm.
or something that I don't do well? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a twinge to that.
There's anxiety associated with it. There's a little bit of an ego hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we do well to acknowledge that most of us have that. It's much like overcoming fear. It's like fear doesn't go away, but you know, you acknowledge it. And that's part of moving on with courage. So always it's good to think of it as a relationship. And in any relationship, do we like it when somebody is thinking something about us or about what we've done
right.
more accurately, and they don't tell us?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
What about when we find out later on, we have that conversation that happens late
mm-hmm.
that, you know, you kind of made a mistake back there. There's another way you could have done that. And the other person's going, why didn't you?
Tell me then. Yeah. There's nothing worse than the annual performance assessment process, which happens every February in every corporation in America. And the boss says, you know that thing you did last May? That was blah, blah, blah. And the person's going, I don't even remember that. No, because the feedback's irrelevant when it's given that late.
Now think about in any relationship, significant other relationship, parent-child relationship, when you get that kind of feedback, what happens to trust?
Right.
What happens to credibility? What happens to the relationship?
Yeah.
we all like to know where we stand.
Where we stand.
In
how
relationships.
Are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And so that's critical, and that's how trust gets developed. And Lee, like you're saying, please bring up stuff that's really meaningful. If you're micro-watching me, mm-hmm. and you're bringing up something that's inconsequential to the job or to the friendship, relationship, parent-child relationship, and you're dinging me for it, wow, what does that do if I feel like I'm being micro-watched, micromanaged? I don't think any of us like that very much.
No, we don't. There's an erosion of trust there and perhaps belittlement. True story, I will tell the short version of it. I was not involved with this, but I knew so I know this is true, okay, even though I was not directly involved. A person received quite negative feedback in a performance coaching discussion because they used the, quote, wrong font in an email message.
Well, that's a big deal, Lee.
Oh, okay. I mean, fair enough.
Really. Is it Lato or is it Calibri or whatever? You know, yeah.
Was it on brand or off brand? I think in this instance it was off brand. Oh, sorry. I didn't know the email font had to match the brand specs.
And did anybody notice? Well, one person might have, but probably no one else.
Right.
So coaching is really a partnership. And it's a partnership where I think in any relationship, you get to know each other first. You set up some guidelines for what the relationship was going to be, some common expectations of what's going to happen. And then the success of that is around the degree to which you set up a common understanding mm-hmm. of what you're going to do with each other and how what the relationship would look like. Mm-hmm. And then the degree to which you follow up and follow through on that, mm-hmm. you know? And so communication and trust are key. And I always think there's kind of a rhythm to great coaching relationships. You can, you know, well, how do you know that there's trust and communication? Well, you can feel it.
Yes.
You can feel it in the rhythm and the interactions. You can feel it in the rhythm of how change happens or choices get made.
Yeah, what's the level of openness and candor mm-hmm. that can be shared back and forth? Those are all key indicators of the level of trust. Mm-hmm. In our notes here, I'd like to call the audience's attention to this. The role of a coach in any relationship, whether it's in a business setting or in a personal setting or a parenting setting, it really is an honor. And as we've tried to express, it can be a joy for the coach, right? And in my consulting and executive coaching, I tell people, anytime that you are at least partially in control of someone else's life, hey, I'm your boss. You know, I could fire you and deprive you of your livelihood if it came to that. That's having considerable control over someone's life. So you better take that as a sacred honor. And I use those terms. That's sacred. You better enter that relationship with that individual with that in mind if you hold that much power over them.
We may lift up three or four points in this conversation we're having and go, this is a biggie.
Yeah.
This is one of them.
It is.
And I would extend what Lee is saying to any kind of coaching relationship, any relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, having a great friend where you coach each other periodically. Mm-hmm. That is an honor.
It is.
And it should be a joy being a parent. Mm-hmm. What an honor that is.
When you're exasperated with someone, whether it be your child or a friend or a coworker, whomever it may be, I get it, but you need to step back from that as much as you're able to in that moment and say, no, this is an honorable relationship. I should treat it with as though it were sacred.
The notion that in coaching, like in relationships, you're not going to have conflict appear. You are going to have conflict appear. I remember one lesson learned that I got very early as a professional coach was, and it was a coaching engagement that didn't go well. And I learned out of that. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happened with me and the individual involved was they had the impression that when I was suggesting something or suggesting a potential course of action on something they were doing, and I was suggesting it as one of many options, one to think about, they took that as direction.
Yeah.
And they took that as, well, in this relationship, I'm supposed to go do what you say.
Carry out your marching orders.
And it didn't go well for them. I have no idea exactly how they handled it, but it didn't go well. And they came back upset.
Yeah. Thanks for the advice.
With me. Thanks for the advice. And we had the discussion where I like said, wait a minute. So maybe my bad that I wasn't explicit, that we were just talking through options, but the choice is yours. My being your coach isn't usurping your right to choose and decide. Mm-hmm. It's your life.
Yes.
And so I learned from that. Mm-hmm. And so became certainly in business coaching much more explicit about where those boundaries are. And I've even, that even influenced a little bit my parenting, where I'm, it's like, let me be very clear about, you know, when we're talking about something, what is left to you to decide, as opposed to me directing you to do something.
Yeah.
And I've never believed much in directing.
Right.
I mean, we all own our lives.
Exactly.
You know, so as a coach, I'm giving you ideas or hoping some light bulbs come on for you through asking questions.
Yes. Here's some advice, some counsel, some guidance, but the choice ultimately is yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now in coaching, I learned another valuable lesson in business where I'd just become a new manager and actually was talking to one of the supervisors on my team who had previously been a peer. We'd both been supervisors. I got promoted to manager and I was struggling with giving some difficult feedback to somebody.
Yes.
And I was sitting in my office and she was in there with me and I was whining about having to go out and give this feedback. I wasn't looking forward to it. And I think she finally had had enough and kind of said, well, just tell them.
Right.
Just tell them.
Right.
You know, and then she like said, people trust you. They always think that if you tell them something that it's in their interest. Mm-hmm. And that was life changing for me. And it was both parts. It was somebody holding up a mirror saying, you know, for whatever reasons, people tend to believe that you have their interests at heart if you tell them something. And then obviously the second part of, if you have feedback, tell them.
Just give it to them.
They would want to know where they stand.
Right.
And I went out and did that and it went fine. And that pops in my head now, decades later, every time, you know, that I have. So she coached me. And gave me a life lesson. And of course, as these things go, we're friends here decades later, and she does not remember this at all.
Oh, wow.
No recollection of it. For me, it's clear as day.
Yeah, that's particularly cool. Yeah. Okay. So, dear audience, bear with me for just a moment. This relates to Dave talking about just tell them, just give people direct adult to adult feedback. What do I mean by the expression adult to adult? Just be candid and just be frank and be loving. And the feedback doesn't need to be belligerent, right? The feedback just needs to be direct and candid. So here's what I want you to bear with me on, dear audience. I'm very, very old. And when I was a young manager,
you're not that old.
So many years ago, I was formally, emphasize, formally taught as a new manager to give feedback to employees in the sandwich format. A lot of times there's a nasty qualifier that precedes the word sandwich, because this is a PG-13 show. I'll just say poop. Okay. And the sandwich format of delivery is top piece of bread is tasty. Dave, you're really such a good member of our team. Then the middle part of the sandwich is, man, you really suck at your job. And then the bottom part of the sandwich is, but you're a hell of a guy. So that literally was taught. There's been a considerable amount of research conducted about that through the years. It doesn't work. It never worked. It's never going to work. Don't do it, because it tries to slip in the bad news between other flavorful stuff, right? No, people sniff it out. They don't even hear the good stuff because they're waiting for the bad stuff to come. So if you're ever in a position to give feedback in that context, just tell them.
It's some kind of, sometimes, known as, you may hear, you know, cookie feedback or Oreo feedback.
Oreo feedback.
Sometimes gets called.
Yep.
And Lee is so spot on with this from my perspective where, and it was a school of thought.
Yeah, it was taught absolutely formally trained for
about
decades.
Feedback. And it's like, who is this fooling?
Mm-hmm.
No one.
Yeah. No. I even had a person one time literally say, yeah, when I was giving them the good stuff. Just hit me with whatever the bad stuff is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now think about what that does to trust.
Right.
And the relationship and credibility. It just chops it at the knees.
Yeah. I understand the thought behind it, which is I want to honor you as an individual, express appreciation, and then slip in the bad news.
Yeah.
But the research tells us people are just, they're tuned for the bad news.
Well,
so just give it to them.
And the point, there's a couple of points with that. One, Have you told them good news? Oh, if you now are thinking of something good to say, why didn't you say it when that happened?
Right.
You know, so it goes both ways. You know, the immediacy of feedback is both for the, quote, good and the bad. And is bad feedback actually bad? We all want to grow.
Right.
We all want to learn.
Right.
And I think one of the key things to me, Lee, is in giving what people lots of times think of bad feedback is to do it based on behaviors and things that people have done.
Here's a really, really simple illustration of what you were describing. I was taught this long ago, and it helps keep me straight in a coaching conversation. Let's just say I need to have a conversation with you because you've arrived late for work 3 days in a row. So it's time to talk about that. I would say, I have observed you arrive late for work 3 days in a row. That's an I statement. I own that. It's qualitatively different from saying you're late. You're late is a character judgment, as you were saying. You're late means you're a certain kind of person. Well, maybe you've been on time every day for the last 5 years, but for some circumstance, you've been late a few times recently. To say, I have observed this will maintain our relationship far better than, well, you're always late.
Or you're not committed.
You're not committed.
You're not committed.
You must
here.
Be slacking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is talking about the person.
Yeah. I statements for the coach are ownership statements. You statements tend to be blaming.
This relationship, this coaching thing is in all, it's in all relationships.
It's in all relationships.
If an alien comes down to Earth and says, hi, mm-hmm. we're here.
Yeah.
Is there going to be a coaching element to that? Of course there is. We're going to go, tell us about yourself. What? Help us learn.
Yeah.
And they're going to be going, well, what's going on down here?
Right.
We're going to coach them back.
Yes.
So all of these things we're talking about, they really are that broad. And we think the principles that we're describing, the things that we're describing, are going to be important. I don't think aliens are going to be really up for having sandwich feedback for us.
No, no, no. I would like to believe they're more advanced and sophisticated than that model.
Exactly. So let's talk about motivational feedback a little bit. Lee, you brought up performance reviews in a work context. And I think one of the things that I believe in very strongly, and as a manager, you can feel it in yourself, you know, where you go, we're getting ready to have that annual review. There's nothing that is something they need to do different mm-hmm. or change that I haven't already talked to them about.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to them about all of it.
Yeah.
Ah, good. So we can briskly go through results,
mm-hmm.
capsule of the year. There's not going to be any surprises. And then most of the time, let's talk about where are you?
Right. What do you want to do?
Where are we going to go? Where are we going to go? And that the motivational opportunity there to talk about their development, where they want to go, where we're going together. And usually those kind of reviews end up both people feel better, trust is confirmed, mm-hmm. the relationship is affirmed, and you both leave feeling really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
That is very different than the demotivational feedback that comes from being delivered late.
Yeah, but you said a key thing. All of that is enabled by constant, frequent feedback throughout the year.
Yeah.
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 In the absence of that, that annual conversation is not going to go that well.
Yeah. 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 There's let's talk about environment for coaching and environment for kind of ongoing performance management. And Lee, as a professional coach, I'm sure you think about in any kind of coaching activity you're doing, what is the environment around that coaching that I want to create? And it may be very specific to the person that you're dealing with. Talk about just how you think about that or where that might go.
That's an important dynamic, the environment in which coaching occurs. So thanks for setting that up, Dave. First, it must be private and confidential. Duh, right? You're not going to coach someone out in front of their teammates or something like that, whether it's, unless it may be praise and compliment and recognition, in which case you may wish to do it in a more public manner. But if it is, hey, let's have your annual performance discussion here. We're going to do that in a quiet, enclosed area, whether that's in an office, a conference room, someplace like that. And this to me is a big deal. Make the physical environment as equivalent or equal as you possibly can. Now, what the heck do I mean by that? If I'm the boss, I'm not going to sit behind my desk because that is a barrier for discussion and communication. It also puts me in a position of power. So come out from behind that desk, bosses, and sit in your side chairs in an equivalent position with the person that's being coached, right? And then try to be as conversational and as low key as you possibly can be, because if there is somewhat challenging information to share, that'll help keep the emotion out of it. And I also will leave off this conversation with a policy that I like to establish, and I just do this verbally, which is, can we please establish a no interruptions policy for our conversation today? And the other person looks quizzically at you and goes, well, sure, what's that? And I go, when I'm speaking, I would appreciate it if you just let me get to the end of my piece without interruption, without asking questions. And then when it's your turn to speak, I promise I'll give you the same grace. I've never once in 1,000 times had anybody say, no, I'm not interested in that. Everybody's grateful for that. And it sets up an expectation that when I'm talking, you're listening. When you're talking, I'm listening.
And I'm doing a huge head nod on everything you just said. I mean, that is, and my mind is also immediately going to, well, isn't that the case, what you're describing, Lee, in any kind of relationship?
Any kind.
Interaction.
Any kind.
Particularly when there's, you know, feedback or an issue or something to bring forward.
Yeah.
Everything that you described.
So I can remember having a 16-year-old son, and there was a coaching conversation, and I think that may be one of the first times I said, we're going to have a no interruptions policy here, because I know he was itching to say, I didn't do it, it's not my fault, and all those things. And I just said, let me talk. And then when I'm finished, you're going to have your opportunity to say whatever it is you'd like to say, and I'm not going to interrupt you. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and a couple of things come to mind, Lee, with everything you just said. One is, if a coaching discussion or a performance review kind of thing negatively escalates, then as the coach or the manager, you know, if the other person is getting a little worked up or a little upset, there's some things that really help that is managing yourself. Breathing.
Yeah.
Stay composed.
Yes.
Continue to really listen. Stay true to the rule you're describing.
Right.
And stay calm. And there's a phrase that I like to think of, stair step the tone down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I gave you feedback like this and you come back like this and da da da. And I try to maintain the tone, and then your comeback may be, well, da 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 da. And I try to legitimately stair-step you down by staying calm myself.
Right.
Managing my pace of speech, mm-hmm. not talking faster, maintain that, maintain my tone of voice. And always in those situations that hopefully rarely come up, is to remember 70% of what the other person is still going to be getting from me is my body language.
Yeah, nonverbal communication. That's 70 to 80% of the entire communication ecosystem. Yeah.
10 to 20% is my tone of voice.
Yep.
Whether or not that changed. And the words are last on the list.
That's right.
You know?
And that's right.
We want to make the words the big deal, and they're the least of it.
They're the least of it. That's right.
The other thing, I had a wonderful experience with a boss decades ago, again, early on, thankfully, in my career, where we had a customer service situation. I ran a team, and we had a customer service issue, and I was handling it a certain way. And my boss was from another city, came in. She didn't come in for that. We had a great relationship. She was a long-term mentor of mine. She helped me get promoted, blah, blah, blah. It was that kind of relationship. But she came in into town, and I had my office, as I'm describing here, and was in my chair, and we were talking, and she was on the other side in a chair. And she said, let's look at your computer for a second. And she brought her chair around, and we were sitting next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what you're describing, you know, comfortable, equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, let's look at one of these examples and tell me how you're thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I brought up one of the examples, and we were looking at it. And she led me through a series of questions
mm-hmm.
that led to a light bulb coming on for me about how the customer was actually experiencing this interaction with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of going, we're doing this and this and this and this. That's kind of enough.
Mm-hmm.
And she led me to the light bulb self-discovery of, yeah, but what's their experience that's actually happening? And I ended up going, what we're doing isn't enough.
Right.
She never said that.
Yeah.
She never said that.
She led you to that. your own conclusion
to my own conclusion
through questioning. Yeah.
And that changed my entire, she probably doesn't even remember that. That completely changed my whole notion of what customer service means. Mm-hmm. That influenced me for decades on, including when I, you know, was a leader for a customer service organization.
Yeah.
So what a gift.
Yeah.
And it's that everything that you described in the logistics, she did.
Yeah. Yeah. She probably understood that intuitively.
Yeah.
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 Well, you've also brought up an important dynamic. Much of coaching, again, in a business context, a personal context, a parenting context, a lot of great coaching occurs through questioning.
Yes.
Questioning. Now, this occurred, you know, would you help me understand why you made the choice that you made there? What could you or might have you done differently? If you'd done something differently, what would have been the likely outcome of that? Just foster as much critical thinking as you possibly can. And that helps people arrive at their own conclusions, which does what? It elevates their ownership of that conclusion far more than hear me saying, this is what you're going to do going forward.
Help me understand is a phrase that I probably use more than any other in business and in kind of coaching or conflict situations. And it's a question.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ask that's not really a question, but it's open-ended.
Mm-hmm.
And then you listen, like you're saying, you listen without interrupting.
Yeah.
And the power of that in terms of both the information you receive that helps you figure out how to coach through that, but it's the invitation to hear the other person's perspective.
Right.
Give them the opportunity to talk. Incredibly powerful. Incredibly powerful. So I think in coaching sessions that we have some reminder tips, and this is true certainly for performance reviews and that kind of thing, is to, you know, as we're talking about results or progress, not just talk about the what. These are the numbers you got. These are the things. But talk about how people did it and why they did it and the behaviors that they did that reinforce that.
Yeah, so I came across a little algebraic formula. I wish that I could remember the source, but I don't. And it's just a little model or formula that helps me talk on a day-to-day, ongoing, routine basis with people about how they're doing. And the formula is R plus B equals P. R plus B equals P, in which R means results. And B means behavior, and you add them together and you get P, performance. So you might go, so what? Big deal. What is that all about? I just think it's an easy dialogue tool to say, you know what? Your results on this project were excellent. And then enumerate why you thought they were excellent. You did this particularly well. You came in 3 days early, under budget, whatever. The results here are excellent. But you left some scorched earth relationships in your wake. Mm-hmm. So your behavior in this project was not what our standard is around here. So if you put great results and behavior together, your total performance score is what? Okay. Or maybe your behavior is great. Everybody loves you as a teammate. You're willing to pitch in and so on and so forth, but you're kind of letting a few balls drop on your job. Well, your behavior high, your results not quite so much. Your total performance score there is right? So it's just a very simplistic, easy model to have ongoing coaching conversations.
I love that model. And any time that we are having kind of a relationship touch point, where are we? Mm-hmm. How far have we come?
Yes.
You know, where are we going next? There is a notion, there's a feeling at the end of those of, have we grown? Have we made progress?
Right.
Have I made progress?
Right.
Have I grown? Do I have momentum? Does mm-hmm. the relationship have momentum? It needs to be true, but the truth of it lots of times is that, yes, you are growing, you are changing, you are progressing, or the relationships are, but along the way, there have been bumps in the road.
Yes.
And here's how those have been dealt with. And I think that becomes very important, the sense that somebody's being left with of now at this moment in time from a year ago or from some period ago, what is our momentum? What's the progress we're making? And if there is some progress, then that's a great jump off to where are we going from here?
Right.
Which people almost always want to talk about.
They do.
Yeah. They want to talk about themselves. How am I going to be developed? How is my growth going to be supported? How does that fit with where the relationship is going or the organization? And Lee, talk a little bit about resilience, because I think one of the things that we want to have come out of coaching moments is learning and growth that then enables that person to be resilient and to solve for themselves and do things in the future without necessarily a coach being there for guidance.
Yeah, so resilience is an important topic. I think people build resilience by failing. I think they build resilience by hitting bumps in the road and learning how to recover from them. I don't know this, but it seems to me like if you're just successful every single time at everything you do, would that really foster resilience long term? I'm not certain that it would. So I think resilience is an output of adversity, all right? So in those situations, in a coaching conversation, I like to remind people of a mistake or an issue or a challenge that they successfully recovered from. Hey, remember a couple months ago this occurred? You bounced back from that like a champ. And be very specific about what the issue was and what their recovery was, what actions and behaviors and beliefs went around your recovery because it was very successful. And you know what? If you can lead people to that realization once or twice, you know what they'll begin to say to themselves, not to the coach, but internally they'll go, I'm not afraid of failing again because I know I will be able to recover from it, right? That's resilience.
Yeah.
Is the capacity to say, inevitably, there's going to be a screw up. I may have caused it. Somebody else may have caused it. It doesn't really matter who. There's going to be a bump. How am I going to navigate over that bump successfully and keep the car down on the road?
Terrific. Very, very important points. Okay. I think the last thing we're going to hit for today, because obviously Lee and I could talk about this subject for days. The last thing we will hit today, and maybe we'll talk about this some more in the future. It's a huge topic and an important one, is influence. So part of what happens in a coaching relationship is that when the trust and the relationship gets stronger and stronger over time, part of what happens is the coachee, we will call them, instead of waiting for the coach to come to them with topics, becomes their own coach more and more and will go, you know, I'm getting ready to handle this thing here. You know, I think I have an idea about how I want to handle that and what I want to do. Yeah, but I'm going to go proactively.
Yes.
Before things happen. I trust this person.
Yes.
They've helped me before. They've let me make my choices and decisions. They know me. I'm going to go ask them about this.
Yeah.
And the door of influence for the coach just opens wide open.
And there's no better feeling.
Oh.
Yeah.
The power of being a model and a point of influence that somebody seeks you out to just talk about something.
Yeah. I want to use a personal parenting example to illustrate that. When you have children and they become young adults, maybe in their 20s or something like that, and then one day your adult son calls you up and goes, hey, Dad, I'd just like your advice on this thing I'm facing. Oh, my God, there's no better feeling in the world.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and as Dave just said, that happens in a business context occasionally as well. That's the gold standard, right? As a coach, that's what you're trying to get to, is to build autonomy, is to build reliance and resilience so that people can then use you when they want to use you rather than when it's commanded by the performance assessment calendar.
And in organizations, you know, in a boss relationship, a manager relationship, a peer relationship, or certainly a parental one, as Lee is describing, in any of those situations, somebody will be coming to you like that in a lot of cases because they go, I know that they will give me good thoughts. Mm-hmm. They'll help me clarify my own thinking.
Right.
You know, and they're not going to try to usurp the choice or decision from me. Mm-hmm. They're going to leave ownership with me, but they're going to give me some thoughts, learnings, stories of their own. They're going to help clarify for me who I am and what I want to go do.
Yeah.
Wow.
And at that point, I think something magical happens and you're no longer a coach, but you're a mentor.
Yes.
And I think there's a qualitative difference in those two terms.
All right. So in closing, optimism, momentum, and gratitude, the honor and the joy of relationships, the honor and the joy of coaching, the honor and joy of being coached. Nothing better.
Nothing better.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in closing, what are your ideals? What are your pictures? What are your actions to take? And what is your influence to use?
Thank you for joining us.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us today. As always, feel free to explore more about Pictures Out There at picturesoutthere.com and major social media sites. We hope you have the day of your dreams, the day of your pictures.